Welcome to this ABC Radio National podcast. For more on other enjoyable and informative programs, listen after the end for details. But right now, here's your podcast, which we hope you enjoy.
You're with Radio National, abc.net.au. And on Encounter this week, we take to the road. Hello, I'm Margaret Coffey, and I'm a city person who rarely gets outside the urban area. It took a trip to the country, to northern Victoria, to really bring home the relentlessness and harshness of drought, and what a challenge it is for the old established churches of these communities to meet the needs of drought-stricken times. But drought, along with social trends, has sharpened the ways churches and their welfare organisations do things, and if it didn't before, churches come to mean people, not institutions. So, join me as we make a circuit via Echuca to Kerrang and then a touch over the border to the New South Wales town of Barham on the Murray River. Much of it is irrigation country, but there's great variety of land use and water availability. And there's an accumulation of stories of sometimes confronting doubt and sorrow and parallel hope and solidarity. There's an ethics for drought to be discovered in these stories. And then finally in Barham, we hear a theology for drought. The journey begins at the Vinnie's store in Echuca, where Vince Conlon makes the introductions.
Vince Conlon, I'm the regional president of St Vincent de Paul. Next to me is Norm Walker, an ex-conference member here at Echuca for St Vincent de Paul. Then our esteemed farming community representative, Jenny Farrell, from out in the east. Then Alana Brennan from Campaspe Shire. And Ruth Turpin from Vic Health or something. I can't see that, Ruth. Stop it. There you are, Murray Plains Division of General Practice.
They're all here together with their diverse organisational backgrounds because back in 2003, the Shire of Campaspe was funded by the Victorian government to deal with the effects of drought. Working together was the best option, and it's here at Vinnie's with these members of the local drought relief network where I begin to get the wider drought picture.
Well, you just think it's going to rain. Well, you know, you get 10 mil and you think, oh yeah, right, eh, we'll plug along. Like, it's got to rain sooner or later, so everyone keeps telling me, all the experts tell me, it rains after a drought.
This area was regarded as the food bowl of Australia.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, it's virtually becoming the dust bowl of Australia.
We're in our 13th year of dry seasonal conditions, and I liken it to a very slow-moving tsunami. We don't get all the press and we don't see all the devastation, but it's happening, and it's happening slowly. And people in communities can see that very gradual change, and unfortunately, it's not changing for the better because we're losing our social capital and we are losing a lot of our very staunch farming communities.
We were in a community that was farms all around us. There's two farmers left. There could have been a dozen down there. And we actually owned our farm. But now we're to the stage where we have that much debt, we are not going to pay it off. Like, my husband's 54, and there is no way we're going to pay it off. So,
in all reality, the farmers that haven't been very viable or able to adapt to new conditions have long gone. So the ones that are still farming are very good farmers. They've been adaptable, they've got new ways of farming, they're feeding different patterns, they're not all reliant on irrigation anymore. So there's been incredible learnings and business acumen with them. So you get to this stage now where people are saying, this is our make or break year. And it's way more than someone saying, I can't make a go of farming. We spend quite a bit of time saying, when you look at water inflow patterns and weather conditions and all that data, you've got to say, it's not your fault.
Climate change, as far as I'm concerned, is a load of malarkey. This is climatic. You had droughts back in the 20s, you had droughts back in the 40s, this is another one. But this year is the make or break year, and it's not only for us, it'll be for whoever's remaining, this is the make or break year. So
it goes. These are themes we're to hear again and again.
We do have a lot of people out there who are losing hope.
Alana Brennan was appointed drought officer, and backed by the government funding, she set about bringing organisations together.
We had to set up networks. It was no good working in isolation. I went about setting up the networks with the health sector, the welfare sector, the shire, anybody who was working in that drought area to support our community.
And much has come of this. And I like the idea, for example, of what they call cold calling. Alana Brennan and Ruth Turpin began to take to the road together.
Alana and I will go, we'll pick a road and we'll just simply drive along it and call in at each farm. Unannounced, not knowing what's there, who's there, what their situation is. And it's like we've got a hat on that gives people permission to say, that's okay, these girls, they're not going to blab our stuff down the next house. And sometimes it's like permission to unload. We called on one farmer who said, no, I'm all right, and we just talked and I sort of said, you know, you've got quite a lot on your plate. He explained his situation. He just started to weep. Now, for example, Quambatook, little country area south of Kerrang.
South-west of Kerrang.
Yeah, we did a men's breakfast there. They didn't have a lot of time, but they got together and were talking. Getting them together and making sure that people are talking and looking out for each other is a really strong element of the role too.
The St Vincent de Paul Society had begun its work early, and it set up ripples of connection that flow wider and wider.
We started our drought work in 2002, the first year that the water wasn't available. The 100% water right wasn't available. We have been visiting farms ever since. We've established a network now with the factories here in Echuca. Metricon, the building company next door to us, 12 months ago gave us $100,000 to spend on rural relief, not just here in Echuca, but Shepparton and Cobram as well. The Uniting Church at Kyabram had me over to talk to the Uniting Church from North Essendon. Well, I put over some sort of a yarn, and the next thing I know, I was asked down to a Rotary Club at North Essendon and gave a bit more of a spiel there. And we've got this group now from North Essendon that have gone around to other Rotary Clubs in the city, and we now have 17 farming families on $250 a month at our local supermarkets, just the IGAs, the locally owned ones. And they're hoping to increase that tremendously over the next year or so.
That's one way Vinnie's generated connection.
They were actually successful in a grant, and they used that state government grant to bring all the welfare areas working in drought together. Now you've got people knowing one another. They actually know what each other's doing, because we don't want to waste our resources.
Yeah, ecumenical, isn't it?
It's ecumenical. Yeah. And when we go out, I've never had one organisation, be it St Vincent de Paul, Salvation Army, Uniting Care, saying, what religion are you? Religion doesn't come into it.
Not in that fashion, anyway. So we travel now out into the country. With Vince and Norm, we set out on the long, flat road from Echuca to the Campaspe Irrigation Zone.
There's a hill there.
Vince Conlon used to be a farmer. He brings that experience to his volunteering work with the St Vincent de Paul Society in the region.
Yes, it's looking very, very green. Look at the patches.
Here the country is laid out like a grid, ever so flat, clay land.
You've got to have a reasonable season to grow a crop. There are a lot of patches that haven't got crop.
And this is an area Vince knows well, especially since 2002.
In 2002, we decided to do something with our rural people, and we started to visit farms. Norm and myself visited most farms in the Campaspe area, the Gunawarra Shire too. Yes, just everybody's farms. When we first started, people were a bit, you know, what are these people doing? To the left. After we'd gone to farms one or two times, you couldn't fit more tea in. Well, that's, you know, part of my problem now, I suppose. Too much tea. And we just went around and we called into farms and just asked how things were going. And a lot of what we did to start with was just talking. And people were quite happy to talk to us. Because of the way this is, the length of time this has gone on, we now can go to somebody's place and ask them for permission to pass on their details to other organisations. We've got to go to the right and then the left here. We had a chap in last Friday, a young bloke, and his teeth were giving him a terrible time. Well, he was on exceptional circumstances and didn't know if he went up to the hospital he could get that fixed. He just didn't know. You know, just a little thing like telling him to go to the hospital. Now, I think we can go to the left here.
To me, these irrigation districts are a maze. We stop briefly in what seems like a page of undifferentiated landscape and we meet Julie Campbell.
I'm a dairy farmer on the Campaspe irrigation system. It and the Loddon system are probably the two systems that have been the worst affected. People have there's no horizon for them. There's nowhere for them to go. There's not, you know, they just do not know where they're going. There's so many things happening. There's all the water issues, changes, this modernisation. There's that much stress being put on people. Everyone I know is saying we don't know whether we can keep going.
Again, this is something we hear over and over. For a city person, it's disturbing to hear so often of such a sense of existential threat. But...
no, I can't imagine a future different. I love the cows, undoubtedly. My husband's been breeding Jersey cows since he was 15. It's more than milking cows. He's just totally involved in the breed of cows. Yeah, it's all he's ever wanted to do. So, you know, you've just got to try and find a way to keep going.
On the way to our next stop, Vince explains. There's always something in the car boot when St Vincent de Paul goes visiting, something useful.
Well, it's not to hand out. We want to be of assistance to the families. I don't think we have the resources to give a real good hand up to these people, but if we can get a smile on people's face or just take their mind off the problems that they've got for a moment.
I ask, when you started going out, did anyone query that you were associated with a religious organisation?
Yes, they did, and we told them straight out that we are St Vincent de Paul and we're very proud of that, but we're not coming here trying to sell you a Bible or anything.
And what about yourself? How do you think of the relationship between what you do and your faith?
Well, it's really got everything to do with what you do because you've... because of the faith that we do have.
I'm about to learn that generosity is generative.
We're about to go in Wood Road just here, and we're heading up to Leanne and Jenny. In fact, that car there would be Leanne going home, I would think, from the school bus. We're just going to slowly go in here and... keep on going around the back of the house.
There she is.
There we go.
Here you are, madam.
These people are beef farmers, and Leanne has been a conduit for the kind of support made available through Vinnie's.
I hope so too.
Yeah, good.
We can smell the capers coming up the road. Oh.
Can I hold anything for you?
Hello.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
Margaret, it's Leanne Welsh, and I'm from the Calibal area. It's a farming community, an irrigation area, and over the last few years it has been terribly affected by drought. I just know in my little area here there were 6 farmers close in the space of 2 years. It's been a huge learning curve, and I actually see us more as survivors. We're still here after the 10 years of drought, and, yeah, I see we're all hanging on just in hope that it will rain. Excuse me.
When Leanne returns, she explains.
I'm starting to feel like we're being abandoned, and like they're just saying that this is how the climate's going to be, so we have to get used to it. But I don't think they realise just what we're going through. It's not like we can pack up and just leave and start afresh somewhere, and you can't just turn drought off. This happens all the time, Margaret. My phone runs constantly.
It started with a car coming up the driveway.
A lady drove into our driveway one day. It was Major Wendy Oliver from the Salvation Army, and she brought in a box of groceries and a box of toiletries. And that was in 2006, and that was huge. We hadn't asked for help. We didn't think we needed it, but to have someone actually drive in our driveway and offer to help us was huge. And that feeling when she was here made me want to go out and do that as well. The first thing we did was a special day over at the East Loddon P12 College in 2006, and we actually put on a special day for the school kids, and that motivated me to keep going. And since then, so many doors have opened, and I've made a lot of friends like Vince and Norm. At the moment, I'm part of Australia Help. I've just joined Australia Help, and I'm also on the board of the Helping Hands Mission. And we've created a mobile op shop. So we're actually travelling into drought-affected areas and bushfire areas, and we're bringing op shops to different communities that might need a bit of a hand.
I'm calling what I hear from Leanne and people like her an ethic for drought, and there's more to come.
We have a railway line coming up.
We're on our way now to another of Vince's connections. There's an amazing web of connection woven along these roads, and it sustains communities in all kinds of ways.
Oh, well, I've known Anne now for about probably 7 or 8 years. I was out with another gentleman that was part of the Rochester Conference of St Vincent de Paul. It was really out in this area. It was our first driving around to visit farms. And we went in there. She's involved in her community very, very heavily.
We sit in the kitchen.
I'm a mother of five. That's probably my major claim to fame. I have a husband, Mark. We've been here for nearly 20 years. In fact, we moved in the day before our first daughter was born. You know, when we talk to people and they say, where's Bemorne? We say, well, it's the centre of the universe, so.
And then there's the reiterated story of loss and depletion.
We are 7 kilometres from Lockington, which is our closest town. If you drive into Lockington, go one block and then come back again, there used to be about 19 dairy farmers in that drive, and we're down to about 8 now. And I just heard there's another 2 that are going to leave at the end of this season. So it shows up in our school. So in 10 years, we've lost nearly 100 students, which has an impact on how many teachers we've got and class sizes and those sort of things, resources that we can attract. I'm also the treasurer of the Football Club Ladies Committee. We cater for funerals, we cater for other events in the community. And the thing we've really noticed is with this ongoing drought, there's a lot of farmers that have given up farming, and there's also a lot of farmers, especially the wives, who are working off farm. So if we've got a funeral to cater for, you might ring 20 people before we can find a couple of people to help do the catering for an event. I hate being in this drought. It's really energy sapping and mentally exhausting. The children are really aware of the impact of the drought, but I think there's going to be a lot of positives that we can take as a family in that they know that they've got to work for things. They've seen that the way Mark and I get through things is that we support each other and that we work with other family friends, that we stick together, that you can't do things alone. So I think they're learning some really good values about being connected to a community And also, the one thing that we know that is secure, that no one can take away from us, is the most intangible thing, and that's our relationships, our connection with each other. And I think that's a really good thing for the kids to learn too, that, you know, you can build up all the wealth that you like, but in the end, that's not what matters.
Here, I ask a necessary question.
How do we rationalise being irrigation farmers? Well, we rationalise it because we use water responsibly and efficiently. We have a policy where we don't let waste products leave our farm, and we treat our cows humanely. We actually really love our farm, and we want to make sure that what we do is good for the future. Irrigation has been around for thousands and thousands of years, and it's how you feed your population. We feel we have an innately good career in that we produce food. We're not transferring wealth that never existed there. It's tangible food for people.
I'm yet to ask about climate change. How is it that so many people hold on to doubt? What is the responsibility of religious organisations on this matter? Is it their business?
We're heading towards Lockington now, where we wish to go to the supermarket. It's an unusual little supermarket. Well, it provides all the goods that you need, include a lot of things like rubbers and things for dairy farms. They've got to go to the right here. They haven't put any of their staff off. They still employ the children after school, and they're very, very community-minded people. Now, we slow down here very much so that we can get caught here. You think there's nobody here. This is very, very much a precocious little town. Policemen can be anywhere.
Hello, how are you?
Leanne
and Brendan have had the business for 31 years, and they were born into the area. Again, I hear the prelude.
In about 2002, we had 1,800 people, which we drew from 10 kilometres. On our last census, there was 1,300 within 10k.
Here, it's very quickly turned around.
We currently employ around about 43 people, which is 25 casual. It's about 5 part-time, and the rest is in full-time. We looked at how we could actually engage our community and be positive about it, so we took on more juniors. We look at if we give the kids an opportunity to make their own money, teach them life skills of how to manage the money. It goes in the bank, they've got their phone, their other commitments that peer pressure puts on them, so that basically we're actually helping the community by getting the kids off the farm for a little while. They're getting an income. We run after school 4 juniors, then on the weekends we'll run 6 on Saturday and 6 on Sunday. The idea is that we run so many juniors that they can swap. They're actually excellent in what they do and their skills. You'd actually look at some of them that their skills are up to the adult skill level.
It's a business with survival on its mind, and it's also a benefit, linked into the web of social connections spun in partnership with organisations like Vinnie's.
Vince and Norm are very engaging, and they don't allow you to get away, basically. We've had a fantastic partnership with them as far as vouchers. We'll type up the voucher for these guys and they'll put up the money, and basically it helps our business and it helps our community survive. We have a fantastic minister with the Anglican Church. He's on his motorbike and he'll drop in and he'll grab a voucher. He'll take out to anywhere he goes, out to Elmore or out to Midiamo. He's got a very wide run. Look, he just works hours. He's fantastic, Simon.
You're with Encounter on Radio National, abc.net.au, and I'm Margaret Coffey. Midwinter, finding out about the sustained drought that affects the state of Victoria. We're making a circuit of northern Victoria, travelling now to the town of Kerrang.
My name is Ollie Jones. I'm 78, 79 this September.
A local Anglican minister tells me, visit Ollie Jane. He's one of our historians.
Both my grandfathers came to Kerrang in 1876 when selection was in full swing, and also one of my great-grandfathers, and they all selected land here. It was open plain country, a lot of it, and there was a lot less clearing here than there was further south. But nobody told them about the rainfall.
Ollie Jane sees Kerrang history in chapters, and the early ones were hard.
In the 50s and 60s, I call them the golden years, because we had good prices, technology, we got tractors with rubber tyres and hydraulics, we had machinery. All of a sudden those things became available, and we were doing things that our fathers couldn't do before us. I refer to Kerrang in the past as being a hub. In my lifetime, 1967 was the only year that we were short of water. Even back in the drought years in the 40s, you could get sales water because there wasn't so many irrigators and they weren't irrigating as much land. I'm sure that we were irrigating a lot of land that shouldn't have been irrigated. In the 90s, we had water trading. You could sell it off your farm. Before that, it was linked to the farm, so it was a water right that belonged to the farm. In the last 10 years, we've lost somewhere about 300 people in Kerrang.
Behind Ollie Jane's narrative of water trading and loss sits so many problematic questions, for individuals, of course, and communities. But I wonder about the churches. Ollie Jane meets the Anglican minister, Peter Monsborough, over a collection of vintage machinery.
I come from a farming background, an engineering background. I deliberately join into the community events, and I'm a member of the local vintage machinery club, and I sometimes might help people on their farms fix things or something like that. I carry a boiler suit around with me.
Possibly he's still more at home in a boiler suit. He's one of the four local lay people recruited by the bishop to build an Anglican ministry team in an area for which priests were difficult to find. Between them, they range over the towns of Kahuna, Kerrang and Quambatook.
I work closely with the Catholic priest in Quambatook. Actually, in Quambatook, there's Uniting and Anglican Cooperating Parish. That parish and the Catholic parish work together quite closely, and they worship together on Fifth Sundays. And it's not a communion service, though. We avoid the issues of communion, but we certainly reinforce parts of our tradition and theology which we're able to share, and we work on those.
So the circumstances are bringing churches together.
Yes, they are. The fact that I'm working in an Anglican Uniting parish, which has been going for 20 years, an indication of that.
Here I ask, do you broach questions of ethics with people? A question such as, what is your duty to your neighbour when you're considering the sale of your water rights?
Well, from our team point of view, we major a lot on support. Encourage them in the sense that God is with us and always has been and always will be. But then there's got to be a gentleness about it. People who are undergoing a lot of stress need understanding, and they need to be listened. Not so much tell, but listen to their story and pray for them. When you're the fourth generation farmer in a particular place and you have to give your property up because you can't continue, it is quite difficult to come to terms with that. And there are many people who are doing that right now. And I guess what the church's function is to try and help these people to see themselves in a much wider context, and also to help them understand that they have gifts and talents which they've learnt and gained through their experiences, rural people, and to try and help them to see that there's a life after farming.
So an ethics for drought must focus narrow and wide, as narrowly as the individual and as wide as the globe.
How we can keep the horizons global for small rural communities, that's really important. We need to certainly
understand and value what's in our own community, but we need to have the capacity to bridge, you know, to go beyond and bring things back, as well as take things out and grow them beyond our own communities. So excuse the hands waving around on radio, it's not a good look, but we basically are always looking to see what's the next horizon that can be created, and that strong sense of community comes from it.
Tricia Curry is the Program and Service Manager with the Northern District Community Health Service, based in Kerrang.
Just about every map that's being generated by a government body or a consultant at the moment has our area as bright red. So that means we're either, you know, the most drought affected, have the least water, have the highest levels of chronic illness, etc. And that is a very, very depressing and deficit view. Yet when you live in these communities and are part of them and belong to them, there's also a sense of that we are in it as a community. There is a tremendous sense of assessing one's own values when you are part of something that is exponential change, and that's really what's happening to us. So I think the concept of stewardship, a sense of, you know, what is there, what is to be really valued and grown or protected, is a very common theme that we come across in the community. Our communities really want to be heard in terms of the stories that they've got to tell about the stewardship that they've already given the land or given the community over a long period of time. For many of them, they want to be heard so that they can be part of the solutions. You know, there are lots of small wins to be had, and we need to make sure we're taking account of them so we can keep building that sense of hope, that sense of being able to work our way through all of this, and there's no doubt we will. It's just that we don't quite know what it's going to look like yet.
A street away, I find Kerrang Technical High School and an account of Kerrang that shifts the glance. Drought is not all there is.
If Kerrang disintegrates, it'll be a lack of water, it won't be a lack of leadership. Sometimes we look for leadership that's almost messianic in a way, whereas the leadership that communities like Kerrang need is really a leadership that's spread throughout the community in lots of little areas.
Lloyd Lewis is the principal at Kerrang Technical High School.
I particularly wanted to come to the country because I grew up in a little village in Guyana. I actually chose to come to country Victoria, and I would have been the first non-white teacher at Kerrang Technical High School.
He begins to fill the image of Kerrang with complexity. Drought is only one lens through which to regard a regional town like this.
We went from a school community when I left here in the mid-80s of nearly 900, and I came back to a school of 730, and currently we're down to 500. The families that are coming in now, many of them are coming here because there's cheap housing. They're families who require high level of support from their community. We work very hard to ensure that our students have the best possible or the widest possible options, because we know that the farming industry is declining. All the things that actually give jobs are declining. We can't see where that decline is going to end. The notion that somehow the area may become an environmental Shangri-La, that seems to be a bit of wishful thinking. When they come to school, we insulate them from these things. We create a little haven of hope. We try to get money from wherever we can, from outside of the town, so that when we run camps and excursions and we get the message, I don't want to go, we don't take that at face value anymore. When the kids come and we know they're not eating and all of a sudden they're not buying lunches, well, we quietly make sure that the welfare coordinator or the school's chaplain we've got a fair idea what's happening. The school council accepts this. There was a time when the school canteen returned money to the school in order to support programs. Now, if the school canteen breaks even, we'll be happy with that.
The school has had a chaplain since the 70s. The role is filled now by Catherine Dawson, a member of the local Anglican ministry team.
I think one of the hardest things about being a chaplain is actually to say what we do, because it's many and varied, and One of the roles of the church through history is to be a place of sanctuary, and that's how I see part of my role here, is to be a safe place for students and staff and parents where you can say the ugly bits and it's okay. I also see my role as advocacy and mediation. In terms of conflict, it's really important to have a place where you can sort it out. And I describe my job as lurking with divine intent. I think the role of the church is to challenge the dominant culture, because that's what Jesus did, and he looked at how power was distributed and how decisions were made and what looked after people and allowed them to worship. And I think that's what the church is trying to do here as well, is to give people a voice and to know that they are cared for.
So in school, Catherine stands by teenagers and their parents and the staff. And out of school, she keeps an eye on the way of things.
I've seen the level of anxiety in the community slowly increase. And there's a sense that the haves and the have-nots are getting further apart. And there is a sense that there are deserving poor and undeserving poor. And there's a real competition for what's left. I guess there's a limited bucket of money. And so where we were helping some of the marginalised kids before, well, now that money should go to, you know, farming kids, or, you know, or they, or, you know, that lot always get help. So, you know, in that time we gave our money to somewhere else. Once upon a time, you know, you could plant a paddock for the footy club and the netball club and the church, and that covered all your fundraising. Well, that can't happen now because there isn't any paddock to grow. So, yeah, it's that sense of desperation to make sure the best people get the resources.
Drought is not all there is, and an ethics for drought takes this into account. I have one more stop, and the journey there takes me through mission country, at least it was in the 1880s. North of Kerang are twin towns, Coondrick and Barham, both based on irrigation farming. Barham, the larger of them, sits on the New South Wales side of the Murray, and it's there that Baptist pastor Jeff Leslie is based.
Yes, the Baptists have always been strong in northern Victoria. I think it goes back to a great missioner they had back in the 1880s called F.J. Wilkin, who, when he came here in 1880, there was one Baptist church in the district, that was at Kerang. And when he left in 1899, there were 22 churches, which is a pretty fantastic effort.
He stands, he says, in the well-shaped shoes of the 50 pastors who served before him, in a modest church fit for a town of 1,200 people. In drought, what do people want of him?
Well, the first thing people want us to do is to pray and get God to change the weather. And we tried doing that. We prayed every week, you know. And after a while, we decided that the answer was no. God is answering our prayer, yep. No, no rain. So we thought, well, if the answer is no, it's because there's something happening bigger. Maybe it's climate change. Maybe it's just an extended cycle. But we have to do something. God doesn't want us to change the weather. He wants us to be a support and a help to our community, to make a difference. I tell people basically there's three ways the church can connect with its community. The first one is by doing our daily work in a good way, by doing good work and doing it for the glory of God. The second way is to join community groups and to act like Christians in them. There's nothing worse than hearing about Christians get involved in community groups and act abominably. And the third thing is that as a church, we have access to resources and can coordinate things that other community groups perhaps don't have, and we need to act corporately as a church as well. So the first two are what individuals do, and the third one is what we can do as a combined group. And I think people take very seriously their opportunities to get involved in community groups. We don't run many programs in the church. We say, why reproduce what's already happening out there? Let our Christian people go and join those groups and make them better. And I think people do that.
And there's the genesis of the Barham Baptist Church's Your Community Cares Drought Relief Project, a project that grew.
A lot of the impulse came from a Christian businessman who was running Mawson's Concrete and Quarry. Their mission statement says, we're here to improve the communities in which our employees live. It's just outstanding. Anyway, that guy, we called a meeting of all the churches in the Gunawarra Shire and then in the Warkal Shire, and we asked them what was doing regarding the drought and whether we could coordinate our efforts. Our church treasurer, who works for that company, the boss said to him, hey, why don't you apply for some of these things? And he gave him time to do so, and he applied for this grant. And somebody said to him, if you apply for something small, you probably won't get it, but if you apply for something big, you just might. And so he took that to heart, and he applied for $300,000. And we nearly fell off our chairs when it arrived. Great! Now what do we do? So anyway, we formed a board, and we thought, let's invite other church people. So I drew up a wish list of the best people I could think of in the district who were Christians. And so we got this fantastic board, half of our church and half from other churches. And we appointed a coordinator, Jane Summersby, and she's been absolutely outstanding. We've just had a great time handing out money and running projects and working with all kinds of community groups. Do you want me to give the stats?
Hi, my name is Jane Summersby, and I'm the project coordinator for the Barron Baptist Church's Your Community Cares Drought Relief Project.
So you dispersed the $300,000.
Well, I certainly helped. And it was a matter of working out best way to do that. And it was just amazing what we came up with.
Some wonderful ones, haven't we? We've done over 200 community projects, and every one of them has been working with a community partner. So we might have helped the football club run a concert or a film night. We helped the ladies group and the Water Flywheelers,
yeah.
They would put on an exhibition and we'd help by paying for the food or something.
When I was going out to the community, it was, this money can be as small, you can ask for a small amount to a really big amount, depending on what you want to do. We said to them, look, if you just want to invite a neighbour over for dinner, we'll pay for the dinner. If you know that neighbour is struggling. Mm. That sort of thing happened. They did a wonderful thing in Walk Hall where they had a progressive dinner. Is that what it's called? Yes.
We've done street parties for people and the Moulamin Football Club's 20th year celebration of their one and only grand final.
And that was hilarious. Again, that was absolutely brilliant. But the part we haven't mentioned is that part of the contract with the government was to train volunteers.
So what were some of the courses we ran?
Well, we've had over 50s computer courses, food handling.
We had a request for people to learn how to drive earth-moving equipment and stuff, but I don't think we took that one.
No, we didn't. We didn't be doing that.
That's probably enough.
The list of ventures is prodigal, and it points to a great model of how a local church community, with all its resources, can enable wider community building.
Walk Hall, the town of Walk Hall, they've probably got about 350 people there. It's a one or one and a half teacher school. Mm. One of the farmers said, I want my children to do something that's completely left of centre. Is it possible to get the Flying Fruit Fly Circus down from Albury? That little school would normally go to a bigger town, to something like that. And they just really wanted to hold a workshop, a circus skills workshop in their school and invite Barron Primary School to come, which they did. And it was brilliant.
They put on a show at the end.
They did. And it was just magnificent.
It was packed with parents.
I know. Yeah, oh, gosh, it was good.
And there looks to be more of what Jeff Leslie calls blessing our communities. Barham's Your Community Cares has been funded again. And Jane Summersby is now out and about consulting with local people. And each week in the local newspaper, Jeff Leslie teases out the meanings and implications of the community's experiences.
I write a column in the Kunrick Barron Bridge every week. I write about all kinds of things. I don't really try and convert people. I think it's more important to win a reader than win a convert. But I do try and wrestle with some of the issues that are faced by farmers, particularly by people who want to think, I suppose, theologically, though I wouldn't use that word in my column, about issues like, you know, why doesn't God answer our prayers, or, you know, what does God want us to do here? Like today I wrote one about the 23rd Psalm and God's promise to travel with us through periods of transition. A couple of weeks ago I wrote one about how to run a successful community project, and I talked about my wife's involvement as director of the theatre group and what a fantastic job she'd done putting on HMS Pinafore recently. I said that whilst we do it for the benefit of the community, we also have a strong underlying belief that in so doing we're building the kingdom of God. And my punchline was, when you do it well, it's hard to tell the difference. So, I guess I do try and articulate for people a framework from the Bible or from theology that explains, helps people think with integrity through the issues that face them. I got an essay published in a journal on a pastoral theology for Australian farmers. The editor said he'd never had anybody write about farming from a Christian point of view before, and I was so pleased to be able to do that.
So what about those thorny questions that come from sustained drought and from a shaky hope built on maintaining doubt?
I'm not qualified to speak about some of the strictly agricultural or, I suppose, even ecological issues. I try not to speak outside my area of expertise. I do think that is an ethical issue, though. I think people ought to be very conscious of the effect on their neighbours of decisions they make, such as selling their water, separating it from their land. Some of those things are out of our hands, but it'd be good to think as a community rather than as individuals trying to get ahead. I also think it's important for us to encourage community participation and stand by people when they're going through transition. I don't think we can stop change happening to our district. I think throughout Australian white settlements' short history, there's been many times when closer settlement has been introduced and then it's failed and they've had to sell up and become large again. And I think we're going through one of those stages. They're always painful. And I think there's no avoiding that pain. All we can do is stand by people during that readjustment period.
And here, finally, is a theology for drought.
Yeah, I'm pretty passionate about this, really. I just think that we used to see that church was the point of everything, that God was trying to get people into the church to get them to heaven, and the world didn't really matter. We could go to hell in a handbasket. And then I realised that the main verse in the New Testament we quote all the time is that God so loved the world. I thought, well, why can we hate it so much? And so I realised that we had to change our attitude, and I thought that what we have to do is to bless the world, that God has put us here to be his hands and feet, to be a blessing to the world that we're put in. That Jesus came to bring the kingdom, you know, the mission of God was to restore the blessing and the wholeness to all creation, and we just help people whatever their dominant need is, that's what we want to help them with. And in so doing, we're creating the kind of society that we believe God has for his long-range plan for planet Earth. He wants an inclusive community where all people's needs are met, and where all kinds of people are welcome. You know, there's passages in the Old Testament that talk about the great dream where every man sits under his own vine and under his own fig tree, and the children play in the streets, and the old people watch, and there's no one hurting anybody, and everybody's safe, and everybody's, you know, happy. And that's the community we want. So we work for it now, because that's what we're called to do.
This has been Encounter, with a title borrowed from one of Jeff Leslie's columns. It's all about hope. My thanks to all the participants. And you can learn more about their stories and their projects by going to abc.net.au/rn and locating the link to Encounter. There also you'll find some of Jeff's columns in the Bridge newspaper, courtesy of The Bridge. You can check out photos and, of course, read a transcript of this program. Don't forget, there's also a podcast version. Technical production was by Joel Church, and the program was produced by me, Margaret Coffey.
There are 200,000 doctors in the UK. There are millions of doctors in the world. There are tens of millions of people with PhDs. I would put it to you that there is no imaginable assertion so absurd that you couldn't find at least one doctor somewhere in the world who was willing to defend it to the death. That doesn't mean anything about whether it's a real phenomenon.
Dr. Ben Goldacre knocking the concept of internet addiction. And you can also hear the novelist Ian McEwan. From the Radio National website, you can download or stream this science show, still hooked on the net.